Let's try that.
How is that?
Good morning.
Have you got signal?
I have.
I feel as if I'm in some sort of stakeout, and instead of having like a, you know, like you got, what do they call it? In detectives, you've got a part. Is it a partner?
Yeah.
My partner in the car is a big bag of laundry. What's happened is I've got up. I've then gone to my in-laws where my wife and Caddy is sleeping with my laundry, but the door's locked. So I thought we'd do our intro for the Sophie Power episode, but have a bit of a catch-up before we let the listeners do. So what are you up to, Rachel?
Currently making coffee and toast. Do you want some?
Do you know what? I was going to do, you know, because I can't guarantee my fitness at the moment or energy. And I was going to do something simple like a Stoptober toast eating, because I'm a big, I don't know if all the listeners know it, but I love toast. I have to eat it at least 8 times a day. And then I thought I'm going to do Stoptober for toast. I tried bread and honey, and I was like looking at it, I was thinking, this isn't the finish. Just little, you know, like just be like the recipe of a trifle. So yeah, I are you doing a Stoptober for anything?
No, I never seem to.
What's happening in the Christmas group for the challenge at the moment?
What's the challenge? It's literally just every day, minimum of like 3 miles. So I just make it up daily.
Great, I like that. If anybody wants to join the group is called the Christmas something.
Part. Just keeping you accountable.
Do you know what? You'll never find it. Unless you know us, you'll never find us. You won't. But yeah, it's a good group.
It's a bit of a giggle and keeps you accountable for the month.
So, anyway.
Are we in October?
Are we in October?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we're in October. So, when did we record with Sophie? Because I said I'll get it on.
We recorded with Sophie on Tuesday.
Oh, I'm a day and a half late. It's Thursday now. I'm trying to be more.
You did tell her, you did say actually out loud, you said Tuesday, Thursday, and you said November. So I don't think she's expecting it anytime soon.
But we've got one recorded as well from about 2 months ago that needs
one
to go
in the
on. Got one in the bank, which is always good. So, ladies and gentlemen, can you say ladies anymore? It's not ladies and gentlemen, it's what and what now, is it?
I don't know. Boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
People of the world.
People of the universe.
Of the universe.
People of the universe. We call
hello, friends.
Hello, friends. and bees and the noses. We caught up with Sophie Power Tuesday. She races incredible,
great
runner, and just somebody who doesn't let excuses for training or giving birth in the way. If you're one of those people, say, oh, I haven't got time, or I don't listen to this podcast, and you'll be like, oh, I'm just full of shit. I have actually got time. I can actually do it. I need to step up.
I've got half an hour, is my motto.
Yeah, I was so motivated. Well, that's why I brought the laundry to get washed. I was so motivated. I thought, right, I'm going to start washing again. I'm going to lose this tramp look and this big old moustache of mine. I feel motivated. And so, ladies and gentlemen, even if it means ironing a shirt, you don't have to go running up mountains. We want to inspire. If you've been inspired by it, even if it's to cut your hedge, or I don't know, varnish your door. Now that to me will never happen because I don't understand these people that take doors off and then they dip them. And
you know, the thing I really liked was the fact that she and I'm guilty of this. She includes walking the kids to school or going for a hike as training.
Yes.
And I don't. And I beat myself up over that. I consistently do at minimum a 5-6 mile a day with the dog. But I don't see that as training. I see that as walking the dog.
Do you know what? After she said that, do you know what cool thing I came up with in my head? You know, whenever you have a dress down day in work?
Yeah.
It's dress down training.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody tries to steal that, absolutely. And I'll find them and I'll punch them in the face. And then Rachel come over. And jump on your leg and give you a Chinese burn. It's dress down training, ladies and gentlemen. I've invented it. I own it now. Yeah. So if any big manufacturers want to go, hey, but it is dress down training. If you work in a factory all day, or if you're a farmer, it's like, if you're doing anything that's moving, that's working out, but it's dress down training.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's the episode.
Really good for me because I
consistently
beat myself up over that, thinking I've been lazy today, I've not done anything, and then I look at my Garmin and I'm like, I've actually done 5.5 miles, you know.
Don't you class that?
No, I don't.
Oh, Rachel,
you know, I was walking the dog as training.
Rachel, you need to. I
will now.
Oh, my Strava, getting up to get a cup of tea and back again, whenever I was on Strava more than Facebook back in the, and that's why I think if it's not on Strava, it doesn't matter. You know, these people that work in factories that might not be happy with their job, you're getting like 8 hours of solid training.
Absolutely.
You know, I think so. That's brilliant, especially going to get the kids. Me, one of the dress down training I'm about to do now is go and train the door again. But there's no sign of life. I'm just in the stakeout with some.
I think they've done it on purpose.
Yeah.
They've left.
No, I think they're all hiding on the floor and switching the lights up because they know I'm going to come over and talk about myself and about things that are about me and just me. And then they'll go, oh my gosh. oh my God. And then they'll all go back to bed because they just get very tired.
Anyway, Sophie Power.
Huh?
Sophie Power.
Oh, what an incredible lady. What she's done for the ultra running scene and just listen to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the show.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
See ya.
Get up. Talking through a laptop. I don't know how we do this, but it's happening. Sophie Power, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Hugh? How are you doing, Rachel?
Hi.
Very good, Rachel. Great to speak to you again. Bumped into Rachel in Chamonix. just dropping that in. But yeah, Sophie, could you just give us a quick bio whilst we go and make a virtual cup of tea of who you are? She races as well, and then we'll just really tuck into that in the show.
Sure. So, hi everyone. I'm Sophie Power. I am an ultra runner and a mum of three littlies. I started running, from scratch when about 15 years ago, when I'd never run a mile in my life, and I decided to sign up for the Marathon de Saab with 9 months to train for it. So my running journey has kind of taken me from there to now, where I love doing super long races to have big breaks away from my children. And I set up something called She Races a year ago, which is all about making races kind of better for women, actually better for men as well in many ways. Since a picture of me breastfeeding at UTMB was taken a few years ago because they wouldn't let me delay my place for pregnancy, and realized there's lots of things races can do to make things better for women. And I try and get lots of people to support that. So that's basically what I do.
I can't believe She Races has only been going on for a year. That's incredible. And the amount of change that you've done through that, Sophie, that's amazing. She Races, if you can explain what it is to people and how it works, that would be a great place to start for the listeners.
Sure. So it's essentially it's a set of guidelines for races to make them better for women. So can how do we make it easier to get us on the start line? What are races doing wrong in discouraging women from signing up? How do we make the actual experience better? No more of those unisex t-shirts. We'd all like some toilets and lots more. And then how do we make sure that our competition is equally valued? And it's not just about the equal prize money. It's about the equal categories and making sure that the coverage is the same and there's tape for the female winner and all sorts like that. So it kind of started with a really big survey of over 2,000 runners from kind of the elite to back of the pack, from super duper ultra to kind of those running their 5Ks, really understanding what events we're doing wrong, really simple stuff, and how do we fix them. So, and we turn that into a set of guidelines put that out to race directors. And lots of them kind of signed up and said, you know, we definitely want to adhere to this, and others have been inspired by it. But breaking them down, just there's so many things, and especially reasons that women aren't on the start line of ultras, especially the longer the ultra, the less women we get. And we think events can do an awful lot in their imagery and their marketing, how they describe their race, giving us the right logistics, just to encourage us to be on that start line.
And I've noticed a massive difference, you know, with marketing and already, you know, how there's more women on, you know, pictures of races now, and the you know, the macho, this is the toughest race, or the, you know, hard, you know, that you've created a big disruption for the better. Sophie, do you get many sort of like organisers say no, we don't want to do it, or is everybody welcoming?
Well, I think kind of organisers all want, mostly want more people on their start lines, and when you've got a real minority women, it's very easy to increase that. Most race organisers actually come back and go, I just didn't realise. And what we ask them to do is not just say, yeah, yeah, we'll do pre-era products, we'll do better toilets, we'll make sure that there's no harassment. We get them to actually write on their website how they thought about it and how they're adhering to it. And it's going through that, they just go, we didn't realise we were getting it wrong. We didn't realise that our main race picture was the start line. And it's all the elite men at the front of the start line. So it's all men that look a certain kind of way. And we're actually alienating people that we want to be on our start line, but they can't see themselves there. So almost always it's been positive. I mean, you've always got a few dinosaurs who kind of don't really care. They don't want to include women. And I think what's going to happen to those races is, you know, the brands that sponsor them are going to pull out eventually, because brands shouldn't be associated with races that aren't inclusive of women or aren't inclusive of all runners, not just the men at the front. So it's been universally, almost universally positive, and has some amazing responses from race directors, and all trying to, there's little competitions with ones trying to go the extra mile and see kind of really how do we really actively kind of encourage every single runner and give them the confidence to be on those start lines and give them a great experience when they're doing the race.
I think that's important, because a lot of the time as runners, or, you know, you get to a certain, like yourself as an elite or somebody who's been running for 5 or 6 years, they may forget that moment where they decided to go for a walk to the lamppost and back, or where they asked another friend to go and do the race. And there's so many between the seconds moments that, you know, can be put off. You know, my daughter did a little bit of the summer ultra that we had. And when we went out training, you know, she was running up in the hills and so on. But as soon as she saw, you know, a group of men, she'd stop and sort of like walk past them. And it's, as you say, there's so much that sometimes that you don't focus on, and that becomes a sort of, you know, the problem. So where did you get the idea from, and how long did it go from idea, Sophie, to actually She Races becoming a thing?
I guess, I mean, I never thought about the barriers I faced really until kind of the kind of picture of me breastfeeding my 3-month-old while running UTMB went viral about 5 years ago. And they turned down my request twice. I mean, I'd lost my place 4 years before. They said, you know, we don't do pregnancy deferral. So I knew that unless I ran, I'd lose my place again. And it's hard to get a place at UTMB. It takes years of lotteries and qualifying. So I thought, I'm just going to be on the start line and have a go. And it was only when that picture went viral that I realised that I shouldn't have had to just have a go and stretch myself and probably kind of jeopardize my body and my recovery. I should have had that deferral because men don't have babies, women have babies. So there should be a differential. There should be alignment to get the women kind of back on the start line after we have babies. It's pregnancy is an endurance event in itself, and we deserve everything to get back as athletes. So it started with that, and a lot of race directors kind of contacting me after going, we just never thought about a deferral policy. And we all know that women don't ask. So the race directors were conscious that there'd been loads of women that would just not show up for start lines because they were pregnant or postpartum. And they hadn't asked if they could defer their place. So swiftly after that, a lot of races, not UTMB quite yet, put pregnancy deferral places, policies in place, Western States being one of them, a lot of the others kind of that are now kind of she races. And then I ended up campaigning for London Marathon to allow pregnancy deferrals for good for age places. Because an amazing lady, Jess Wilber, she's a phenomenal runner, had a championship place. And it was that year where you had two London marathons in the same year because of COVID. Mm. And they said that she could run it 8 weeks postpartum after she has a baby. But well, she wouldn't be allowed to defer till 8 months postpartum because their rule was that there's no deferrals for good for age because the closer you, further out you wait from your time you did your qualifier, the less likely you are to be able to repeat it. And that really probably does hold for most runners, unless you've had a baby in between, in which case the more recovery you've had, the more likely you are. So finally, it was a bit of a fight, but finally we got London Marathon to put in place kind of proper pregnancy deferrals for good for age. And actually they've now gone and looked at a whole range of initiatives and policies for women since then. So it's been brilliant what's happened. So it was London Marathon and then kind of working on others and then trying to get kind of UTMB over line, that I realized it's more than pregnancy deferrals. It's not just having babies that stops us being on start lines. It's so much more. And the more interviewers asked me the question, I thought, I think I know some of the answers, but I don't know all of them. And so then I set out to ask kind of thousands of women, you know, what were the issues? Women's of all kind of all backgrounds, all speeds, all kind of making sure that we talk to kind of every kind of different kind of woman we could. And that's where the guidelines came from. Then talk to race directors about what could be done easily. So I think it's a balance. Like we'd like a lot of things, but if they're not viable for a race, kind of commercially or logistically, and the guidelines really are, they're free. They're pretty much free to put in place. They're very simple. And they really are welcoming women to the start line.
That's brilliant. I know a couple of friends that have unfortunately miscarried, and race directors have point blank refused to defer their place. You know, while they're still even having treatment for it, it's use it or lose it. And it's just shocking, isn't it?
I think that's changing now. I think kind of, and it was a case of, and some still are difficult. And I think what happened in the start of She Races was someone would email kind of me or kind of one team going, this is what's happened. Can you ask them for me? And now it's I've asked them and they've come back and we've got a positive response. Or if they get a negative response, that's when we step in and generally turn it around. But I think race directors are more aware of the fact that it's just not acceptable.
No.
There are certain things, and some people say, well, where do you stop on reasons? But I think pregnancy and kind of babies is, and we can obviously include kind of adoption in that. And a lot of the races that you have to travel to are including the partners as well.
Yeah.
Something like an Ironman, something like UTMB, you don't want to be about to give birth. And I can imagine if my husband said, well, I signed up for this Ironman, and I know you're due in 4 weeks, but cross your legs because I want to do my Ironman because they're not going to give me a refund. So a lot of races doing that too, which is just really brilliant. Same thing, adoption, surrogacy, and some are even looking around IVF treatment as well, which is phenomenal.
I think how the whole ultra world is going is more towards the family as well. I think, you know, as you say, partners involved, and also I think because with a lot of the races being abroad, the partners go with them and the family go with them and they spend a holiday or whatever there. So there is the knock-on effect with the support there. For people that, you know, like, so say if there's ladies, sorry, oh, you've told me not to use ladies. I say ladies and gentlemen. That's a bad one from this old guy. This old guy here.
We'll let you off because you mean well.
And then, so is there a She Races website that lists what races are She Raced accredited, if that's the correct word.
Yes. So we put them all up on sheraces.com, and that's where you can download the race guidelines for. So if you see a race and they're not doing things quite right, best thing is to download the guidelines or send a link to them to the race director and go, by the way, this is how you could do better. These are kind of the recommendations. Instagram, we're she.races, and that's where we update infrequently because, as I kind of said earlier, we're doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes and pretty busy. So social media comes down the list of things to do, but very much we're always contactable there, and lots of people send us kind of good practice, which is amazing because we can then share it and kind of tell other women these are fantastic races to do, which is part of the reason for having the kind of accreditations. But also say, you know, when things aren't quite right, and sometimes it's kind of superficial, the t-shirts are really poorly fit, or they didn't have certain things in place for women, and sometimes it's quite serious, so kind of harassment or security checks or kind of things where women were made to feel unsafe during a race. So we get all sorts of messages in, but it's really important. Every single thing that we can do makes a difference. And I always say, kind of, if someone's doing a race, and this is for men too, as well as women, kind of men can call things out, especially when it comes to kind of harassment. When you see something in a race and people often kind of come to us and go, this wasn't right. And I always say, if you go back and tell the race director, almost always they'll change it for next year. And you're then making a positive change for all the women that then go on to do that race. So it's a really wonderful thing when people take it in their own hands and contact the directors. And generally the race directors are just really, really grateful for that feedback, because we know that kind of when people have a bad experience, they often just say to themselves, well, I'm just not going to go to that race again.
And then as well as She Races, do you, because there's a lot going on, as you say, behind the scenes and everything. Do you have a normal life, Sophie? Do you work, or is it all She Races, or what are you doing?
Should be doing more work. So I have three children, they're 2, 5, and 8, so they're a handful. I also work part-time. I work with growth companies, and I am training for the 24-hour world championships in 8 weeks time. So
is it eight, really, that's in India? Is it India?
No, it's Taiwan.
Taiwan.
So it's a very, I don't have is free time. But I think it's, I don't get to sit down and watch TV. If I'm watching TV, it's because I'm on the bike doing a recovery session, or I'm on the treadmill. There isn't a sit down and watch TV part of my life, but I think I love what I do. It's crazy, but you just see the messages that come in. And I guess I had a time before She Races where I was quite open about kind of issues I have with kind of prolapse and pelvic floor. And I made a documentary for Hoka about it. And just the messages that come in from that and She Races, kind of when you can make change and help other people, it's something that really drives me. So I'm quite happy not to have a social life. But as soon as the World Champs are done, I am going to take a few weeks off and enjoy a few drinks and let my hair down for once.
How do you fit your training in around the working and the children?
So training comes first thing. So that's the only way it works. I mean, it's I do three different drop-offs in the morning and we hike them. So that's actually training. I think a lot of women kind of forget that, especially if you're a mum and you're on your feet all day. And I do 20 miles a week hiking up and down a hill to drop my kids up and pick them up again. And that's actual training. I mean, that's zone one training, that counts. So you might not be running as many miles a week as some of the athletes that don't have to do that, but it really counts. So I drop them off, then I train first thing, then start work, then pick them up. sort them out to their zillion sports activities. It's really annoying how the amount of my 8-year-old does 12 hours of sport outside school, which is challenging. And then I work, as soon as they're back, I work in the evening. And sometimes I'm on the bike writing emails and recovery. So it's a job, but we all juggle. And that's just my juggle. And everyone has a different version of their juggle. And it's all about kind of looking at the week, at the start of the week, going, what help do I have? Where can I make these slots? And then making those slots stick. And for me, the first thing in the morning slot will always stick. I can't train at 6 a.m. because my husband leaves work at 6 a.m. kind of 3 days a week. So a lot of women have that super early slot, but it's really going through in the weekend, kind of that the baton gets handed over. My husband's a cyclist, so he wants his cycling session. I want my running session. The kids are going off to hockey matches and rugby training, and she's, my little one's going to gymnastics and everywhere. And it's a juggle, but it all seems to work.
And did you train all the way through pregnancy?
Did I run all the way through pregnancy?
Yeah. Did you train like cycle, run, whatever, and keep your fitness up, or did you take any time out?
I did. I had three really different pregnancies. I think the first one I ran until about 7.5 months, and then the body said no. And then I had an episiotomy and awful pelvic floor after, so couldn't run for 3 months after, so that was difficult. The second one was pre-UTMB, so I stopped running at 5 months to kind of protect the pelvic floor, but I was training very late and doing low impact, so spinning, treadmill hiking, stepper. And then this one, I ran the day I gave birth. I went on the treadmill for a mile in the morning. I did mostly uphill hiking on the treadmill, spinning, kind of really slow trail run, super soft. But I got on the treadmill in the morning, and she was 10 days early, I think. And I ran a mile and I was like, do you know what? I don't think I want to run anymore. And then my waters broke in the evening. So my body knew what was going to happen, I think.
Are you coached, though? Is this a method that you've put in place for the training whilst pregnant? Or how have you gauged what to do and how to do it? That's, I think, quite interesting.
I have a phenomenal coach called Edwina Sutton, who is a mum of three, and she's a former triathlete, but she's an amazing ultra runner as well. And her kids are all a bit older than mine, so she kind of knows how to manage my situation and the juggle and my reasons for skipping workouts. But I think the working out while pregnant, it used to be a thing that kind of people used to see a pregnant woman and tell them to stop. And the science is showing, and I'm an ambassador of the Active Pregnancy Foundation now, because it's something I believe so strongly in, that if you maintain your exercise and keep fit while pregnant, you know, you're more prepared for the endurance event of being a mother and labor. But it shows that the fitter you are, the fitter your baby comes out. So kind of training in pregnancy gives you a kind of healthier baby, which is a huge piece of research. And to say to the midwife that told me at 20 weeks that I should sit down on the couch and rest for the rest of my pregnancy. So it's so important, but it's all about everyone is so unique and your body just knows best. So I always worked out that if my body said yes to something, it was fine. If my body sometimes just said, that doesn't quite feel right today, and then I'd ease off. So there's some hard and fast rules, kind of don't bump the bump. So boxing was out. don't get too hot. Make sure you're hydrated, make sure you're fueling properly. And then between that, it's just listen to your body.
Oh, amazing. And you know, like the photo of you breastfeeding, what's the science with feeding whilst training? Because I was always told, I mean, my kids are now 18 and 16, but I was always told that if I was doing a run or a cycle that I couldn't feed because I'd be passing on lactic acid or whatever to the baby, and it was massively frowned upon.
I think that's all been debunked now.
Right.
Pretty sure that's all been debunked, because we're very much encouraged.
Yeah. Brilliant. And you all the way through the race, did you?
Like, when so they I, So I couldn't get to the baby, to Cormac until 16 hours in at the halfway point. So I had 16 hours of trying to squeeze my boobs out behind. This is really graphic for anyone listening. And he was only breastfed before the race. So it was it was massive build up. Luckily the race starts at night, so you have a bit less, but it was a lot of squeezing out behind trees. Now, of course, there are those pumps that you can carry in your pack. And I did Lakeland 100 the year after Headset when my youngest was about 8 months. And I had the portable pumps, the RV pumps with me. But UTMB was difficult the first 16 hours. And then my husband was able to carry pumps around the course, which really helped.
Oh, my goodness.
I
wouldn't do it again.
It's mind-boggling. The extra kit is as well that you have to carry.
It's the extra food.
Yeah.
I think that's where kind of the difference is, because it's hard enough to feed yourself during an ultra, like to get enough food in your system. But then to like get enough to keep your milk supply up and then enough hydration in to make sure that you could produce the milk. I think that was the issue. And I did UTMB as slowly as I possibly could. And then my pelvis wasn't fully formed back together, so I couldn't really run. And coming back to kind of ultras being putting people off. I mean, everyone says, oh, kind of UTMB, one of the toughest races out there. I walked it. I pretty much walked it. I think I had to run off one of the coals because I was getting hypothermia. But if you look at the cutoffs and what pace you have to go for those cutoffs, it is really achievable for anyone who can do a fast hike with a little bit of jogging. And I'd say that about almost every single ultra out there. If you can keep going at a good pace hiking and jog the downhills and jog some of the flats, you know, you can get around those courses. And I was 3 hours inside the cutoffs. I think I was in the top half of the women that started.
Oh, man.
So it really is achievable when you break it down. And I guess that's one of the things we ask race directors to do, instead of saying with the cutoffs, these are really super tough cutoffs, and like if you don't make the cutoff, you know, we're going to strand you in the middle of nowhere. Saying, well, this is a pace you have to go to make the first cutoff. This is a pace you have to go for the rest of the race. If you're a bit behind the first cutoff and you're still moving well, you know, we'll let you through. Kind of changing the language to that makes it so much more achievable.
And I, as you say, breaking it down to how people understand it. You know, I was speaking with two people that were looking for a place on the winter ultra here last night, and they said, look, who is it achievable for us, because we did the summer one in 21 hours. And I went, yeah, it works out the same pace as you'd walk down the wine aisle in Asda. And then it was like, right, yeah, okay. Because I think, as you say, with the content that will be on, you know, websites or Facebook pages, it can put people off thinking. That's why I think she races, you know, it benefits everyone as well as the women. It benefits people who, you know, are thinking, oh, I'm not quite sure. Oh, hang on. No, you know, you've got generous cutoffs. There is, you know, extra toilets, especially for people that do, you know, that can be a worry as well for people, you know, that do have stomach problems or IBS or something, that there is extra toilets out there. But it's having, you know, as you say, people won't ask. So it's being able to tell them that, you know, we've got these for you. And, you know, with She Races, it just, as you say, it's going to bring more people to the races. But I think especially for, you know, the races that are our size, it brings more people to the community. And that's, you know, we're relying on the endurance tourists, you know, pennies and pounds in the local, you know, bars and restaurants and hotels and, you know, holiday lets. So I think, you know, She Races is just such a brilliant thing that's come in. So apart from Taiwan for the 24 hour, have you got anything penciled in for next year?
I would love to go back to UTMB.
Yeah.
I think, and then we chatted in Chamonix, and I think kind of I restricted myself from doing any UTMB races whilst they didn't have a pregnancy policy in place. And I was quite vocal about this, and they really thought it, and I've worked with them on this, and I've worked with them with pro trail runners as well, a great group of the elite runners, kind of understanding how do we get more, especially elite women, on the start line in a more competitive race. And they're not quite there yet, but they've got some great policies in place and even kind of committing to kind of period products and committing to the kind of equal showing the athletes. So now I'm allowed to do UTMB races. And I did Eiger 101K this year, which was a phenomenal race. Just so unbelievably beautiful. I'm going to stick my name in the UTMB ballot and hope I get a place. So that's there. I might run a marathon because it scares me. And I'll have a good rage for London. And I think that's something that I could get quite excited by, seeing how fast I could run. I'm not really a marathon person because no one talks to each other and everyone just goes as fast as they can. But I'd like to know, everyone asks you, what's your marathon time? I've got no idea. Yeah. Really. So I haven't run one since my daughter was about 9 months old. So maybe that, but I think there's definitely some more adventuring. I think it's not just about races. And I've just actually come back from Hadrian's Wall, where I did a relay with the Running Channel with four amazing women and just hung out all day and cheered each other on and learned about each other. I'd never met any of them. And the film's out in a few weeks. And I think it's often people say, well, you've got to do these big races and that's what makes you a runner. And I think it's, for me, it's about the experience and 100%. Spending time and doing more running with my kids, doing more running with my 5-year on his bike, kind of loves kind of coming on little runs with me. So I think it's finding something new, finding something that's, maybe there's an FKT out there I'd like to do. And obviously kind of if there's an opportunity to represent Great Britain again in the European Championships, it's very difficult to turn down the opportunity to represent your country.
Brilliant. Sophie, I can't thank you enough. I know you're a very, very busy lady now, so we're going to let you go. But I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We're going to have a little meeting now and talk all things She Ultra about this coming down to the Llyn Peninsula next year. But I don't want to dilute the She Races message. But thanks ever so much, Sophie. Is there anything we forgot to ask or mention just before we all skedaddle?
But if everyone can have a look at She Races on Instagram, have a look at the race guidelines, and just everyone can take away, if you do one race and you think of one thing that can be improved about it for anyone, not just kind of women, please message the race director. They really do appreciate the feedback, and you're helping every single other person that goes on to do that race.
Brilliant stuff. And I'll put all of that in the notes for the podcast, and because I'm a good boy, I've started editing and putting the podcasts out the same day, so this will go out on Tuesday the 3rd of November. Brilliant stuff. Sophie, Rachel, thank you ever so much. And get up, ladies and gentlemen, get up. Brilliant. What a great episode that was. Today's episode was brought to you by She Ultra. That's it. What's the She Ultra here? Well, it is first ever all-women ultra marathon. It's a cancer charity fundraiser with a target of £1 million over the next 5 years. And that's here on the Llyn next April. It's sold out, but there's going to be many more She Ultras over the next few years. What the competitors have to look forward to? Well, you get an event medal no matter how far you go. There's extra aid stations. There's extra toilets. There's sanitary products at each aid station. There's also breastfeeding areas for mums that would like to breastfeed whilst they're there. Those are going to be at the aid stations with hot and cold meals. We've also got buddy walkers, buddy runners. You've also got snooze breaks if you want one. And there's no cut-off. Oh, my word, yes. There we are. So that's it. Oh, and there's a half-time fizz. Yes. Halfway, we give you a glass of fizz if you want. If you're a non-drinker, give it to somebody else. Or you can have one of the lovely refreshing orange squashes or a little bit of flat coke. Simple as that. So that's it. We're sponsored by She Ultra. Check it all out on the Penslin Ultra's website. www.penlyn, I'll spell that for you, PENLLYN, ultra.co.uk, or just go onto the Facebook page and Google Penlyn Ultras. That's us. Get up. Come on. Get up. Love you. Bye.